Hey, everybody, welcome to the Around the NFL podcast presented by Rocket Mortgage. Join Rocket Mortgage in saying thank you to essential workers by posting a video to everyoneknowsahero.com. Everyoneknowsahero.com. Let's get to the round one recap.
The Around the NFL podcast is just trying to get some airtime.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, coming to you from a city filled with heroes and bunkers in prime time. Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Ho. Night one in the books. Hey-o.
We're taping this around, it's just before 10 p.m., and I was trying to remind myself not to, like, scream and yell like I usually do during the podcast, because my sleeping children are only Ooh. About 25 feet away, and then I started the show by going, ho! So.
What is the wall situation there? How thick are the walls? Or is it a real concern right now?
It's a bit of a concern, because I will not be a popular man, you know, with my wife if I wake up the kids.
That would get be smacked problem. Around, maybe.
Yeah, that'd be a problem.
How's that lighting, else doing?
The lighting makes Greg look dangerous.
He does. He looks, I like the look, Greg. I like the look. You look, I don't know how to describe it. It looks a tad sinister.
Yes, we are coming to you about 20 or so minutes after the conclusion of round one of the 2020 NFL draft, the virtual draft. And despite all of the concerns, it went off extremely smoothly. I watched the whole thing. I maybe missed the last pick when I was starting to get set up here in the garage, but it didn't seem like there were any real hiccups in the broadcast. And that is a credit to everyone that worked to make this thing happen. And I actually even thought, and we're going to get into a reaction to obviously all the picks and takeaways from night one, when we didn't have a trade in the first 10 picks or so, I was curious, like a lot of people, I'm sure, if that was directly connected to fears connected to the connectivity of this event. But then the trade started fast and furious after that. Out goes that theory.
Yeah, I thought Lindsay Rhodes put it well. It felt more intimate and less commercial and less massive. To me, it felt like football before instant replay, where you can actually get some momentum going and there's no stops for, like, you know, whatever productions they have planned that night. I kind of liked the way it moved.
Yeah, there was a period where I thought that we might be doing the show at maybe, you know, 5:45 p.m. Pacific, because it was really rolling there out of the gate.
I don't know about that, because they went 18 minutes past the start of the draft and then started a 10-minute clock on Joe Burrow, who had been connected to go to the Bengals for about, you know, 3 months now.
Yeah, I was a little concerned. I think, you know, Dan, we were texting back and forth. I think there was some general concern about what the pace of it out of the gate. But then, it caught fire. And, Dan, I mean, we're burying the lead here. It is your birthday. You're no longer in your 30s, and I know that's been a big a point of contention with the rest of us. We're all so much older than you. You're officially in our decade now, in our time in life. But we wish you happy birthday.
It will be like a tough 7 or 8 months before you guys hit your 50s. But
I'm 41 for the record. You know, give me a break.
I don't have a ton of heat on you guys now, because the 30s to 40s seems like a big deal. I'll always be younger, but I'm happy that things worked out the way they did, in a way, with the draft being tonight, because it did give me something to look forward to, and it wasn't just another day trapped in a house. I did have a chance. The Santa Ana winds were blowing in last night. And as 11:59 ticked to midnight, I sat on my front step and I thought about my 30s, which were insane when I was just going year by year, all the things that happened in my life. So I'm wondering how the 40s will play out. And so far, it was a good birthday, and I'm excited to talk football with you boys.
Well, plus old Joe Douglas wrapped up a nice 368-pound present for you. You know, just like a nice road grader for your
giant
birthday.
Man, that giant mound of humanity. And happy birthday, of course, to Simone Sessler, who also turned 40 today. Under different circumstances, Mark, maybe we would be on the deck after the show celebrating that, but down the road, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the overall vibe here was birthday delayed to some degree. We definitely have to do something when all this wraps up. But I bought her a gift weeks ago that still has not arrived in the mail. So that's a bit of a disaster. And, you know, it was around 6 or 7 hours ago that I deposited her with our kids to go do all of this. So I'm not sure it's exactly how she thought the 40s would begin. But, you know, 40s are a weird time, and she's starting to feel that that same feeling that we feel.
All right. Let's get to it, and thank you, boys. There's so much to go through. So I think, do you guys want to hit on like a big picture thought before we get into things, or do we want to just start cooking through the first round? You guys, let me know.
Let's cook.
Let's go.
I mean, to me, like the one place to start, whether it's like a big thought, you know, that was one thing I noticed. They did it perfectly, the ESPN production, but they occasionally did have the weight of where no one from the 7 box that they had knew when to jump in.
Oh, that was great.
And I felt their pain. But I was going to say, whether it's a big thought or not, to me, this draft's going to be remembered for Tua ultimately going number 5. And I know that's not the first pick, but I don't know if you wanted to go in order or not, but to me that was
a
like
good place to
that's
start.
The moment where, okay, that's what we're going to remember out of this draft.
Yeah, so Burrow goes 1 to the Bengals, and what else needs to be said there? That was the pick that made a lot of sense, even though there were reports earlier in the day that the Dolphins were attempting trade up to get to 3 with the Lions, and then using more that leverage to try to move up to 1 and the quote unquote Godfather offer. None of that ever happened. And then it went chalk. So it went Burrow 1, Chase Young 2. The Lions stayed where they were at 3 and drafted Jeff Okuda, the cornerback. The Giants, as expected, take the first tackle off the board, Andrew Thomas. Maybe a little bit of a surprise they took Thomas, but again, as we've been reading about and talking to people in the know, that all these tackles are so close together. There's no really way to know who was the number one guy, but for the Giants, it was Andrew Thomas. And then, yes, Tua at number 5 goes to the Dolphins, the guy that had been connected to the Dolphins forever. And I think I mentioned it yesterday on the show that the last week or so of the pre-draft process wasn't exactly kind to Tua and people you talked to and what we were reading. But at the end of the day, Mark, the Dolphins stayed right there, and they do now have that guy that they could plug in with all these other new pieces around them, say, this is our future and this is the face of the franchise.
Yeah, I mean, the day began with a lot of whispers of the Dolphins wanting to get up into that spot where Detroit was to get ahead of the Giants, potentially, to get the tackle of their choice, which, you know, I get it. That's a very important position, and they addressed that later on. But to me, you know, we had Steve Weish on the show a while back to talk about Tua, and it took me too long, but I got around to reading his amazing feature on Tua. And it is, anyone wondering who the person is should go read this. And Dolphins fans, if you haven't, should go check it out. I mean, it just painted a completely different picture of this player. And, you read these things and you kind of get swept up. I was just like, I cannot believe a team will pass on him based on his current, the health injury that he's coming off of, the hip injury, because to me, I think he just has the potential to be just wildly electric and completely change a franchise if you get the upside version of that player. And I'm kind of glad for Dolphins fans who seem to have gone a billion years without really a functional franchise quarterback, unless you were in love with the Ryan Tannehill version when he was in Miami. I mean, it's been, I think, 21 quarterbacks since Dan Marino. This could change all that. And I don't know how you go do what they did all season long in the organic fish tank that we spent 1,000 hours in during the season without coming out of this with a quarterback. So, you know, these are all risks and gambles, but I love that they went for it.
I can't imagine them doing the last year and a half any better. I mean, if you think about it, the two big moves they made is, you know, picking up Brian Flores, who won 5 games with a team that they were trying to tank, and now it's getting Tua, who was the guy that they were attached to the whole time, and they traded away all these veterans to get those draft picks, and they didn't have to trade him to go get the quarterback. They got to use him tonight on a couple other players. You know, you mentioned the tackle. They took a surprising cornerback at the end. We'll see if those work, but like, it couldn't have worked any better, because Flores looks like the real deal, and Tua, unlike Justin Herbert, is, I think, a unique talent. I listened to you know, a rare good job by Move the Sticks. I gotta admit, he does a couple pods right around draft time. I think then it ends after the draft and just stops for the rest of
the
year.
He goes down to San Diego and takes about 10 months off, I believe.
Yeah, and so he doesn't cover the NFL at all. But he did this, you know, 360 on Tua. And the most interesting part to me was when he had Trent Dilfer on and him and DJ talking about what Tua does best. And they were just talking about his quickness. And they said his eyes are what sets him apart. He's got the quickest eyes, the quickest decisions, and the quickest release. And it just reminds DJ and Dilfer so much of Drew Brees. And you kind of can't write this stuff that Drew Brees is the guy that Nick Saban passed on because of an injury that he didn't want to look past. He goes with Dante Culpepper, and 15 years later, they still haven't found a quarterback, and they take the guy that reminds me more of Brees than anyone else, and it's Nick Saban's guy, Tua Tagovailoa.
So they get the guy they were organically tanking for.
Right.
But they get him at a much higher risk than they planned to a year ago. I mean, this looks like a risky draft to me. Like, this is the high-risk, high-reward team of the draft. Austin Jackson, a guy some scouts seem to think was risky, according to Bob McGinn's article. And then a cornerback, you know, late in the first round when they already have, what, 10, 12 cornerbacks on the roster? I mean, the team is loaded with cornerbacks.
They have the two highest paid cornerbacks in football. And then in their final first round pick, they take a corner who they plan to play in slot, most likely. But it is still an embarrassment of riches suddenly back there after being completely barren a season ago.
Well, it's very similar to the Patriots building from the back to the front. And I think a lot of, you know, some teams are doing that, like thinking the secondary matters more than anything. But you look at what I think all the buzz happening today and this week, and you got to point to, I think, the Dolphins kind of doing a good job. Like, whatever this buzz was, they convinced enough people that they might take Herbert. And this whole trade that they might trade up for a tackle, to me, that was trying to prevent anyone from trading up ahead of them, either to take Tua or preventing the Giants from trading that pick because the Giants wanted Andrew Thomas. They're saying, stay right there. We want Tua to fall to us. People didn't really have an idea. And who knows? Maybe Justin Herbert turns out fine, but I feel like there's a Justin Herbert in every draft. Like a strong-armed guy who wasn't really that consistent, wasn't that accurate, but super athletic. I mean, he's probably more athletic than Burrow and Tua. But like, you can find those guys. Tua seems like a much better chance to be the guy.
Yeah, and I think to Wes, you're right. I mean, Tua is not a boom or bust, but there is an absolute noted risk to the point where some teams didn't really even consider him on their board. But if they came out of this first round without a quarterback at all, it would be hard to understand what the Dolphins were attempting to do all along. And I just view the other quarterbacks after Joe Burrow just simply not anything. They're just as risky, if not more, than Tua. I mean, stuff on Justin Herbert, I'm kind of glad they didn't go in that direction.
We'll get to Herbert in 1 second, who went to the Chargers at 6. I can't get out of my head the one quote from the personnel man in the McGinn piece where he talked about how, and Tua, it's not just the hip, which was a career-threatening injury, that he's not out of the woods on. It's a situation where they won't know for a year whether that the hip is going to be fully recovered because of the blood flow in that area of the body and all this kind of stuff. But when he gets hit, they say it's like a car crash. And certain guys have the ability to pop right up. He is a guy, when he gets hit, it seems like it's just like, you know, the end of the world. And as they were doing the, you know, highlight reel and talking about right immediately after the pick, just cycling through all the injuries in his college years. And now you're going to the NFL where guys hit harder and run faster. I think it was a good pick, but I'm also totally in agreement that it is a boom or bust move. And maybe the Dolphins felt like this was something they couldn't pass up. So I'm not down on the move, and I'm happy for Handsome Hank, not for Dolphins fans in general, but Handsome Hank in particular. but it is a major roll of the dice here. It really is. At number 6, yes, Herbert goes to the Chargers. We talked about it on the Twitter show. I said that the Chargers cannot come out of this draft, and specifically their first pick, without somebody to kind of build this team around. Herbert's the guy they get, and like Greg said, athletic guy. Didn't play so well down the stretch in his final season in Oregon. There are some questions about how he processes the game speed-wise and makes you wonder, is this a guy you can put right into the lineup? Well, now Tyrod Taylor is a good setup for them there because they do have the option to do the 2018 Browns thing and have Tyrod start and then slide in the rookie when it's deemed appropriate.
he is the opposite of Rivers. You know, it's like Rivers is the guy who takes too many chances. If Herbert has a criticism other than, you know, kind of inconsistent accuracy, it's that he doesn't take chances. It's that he plays it a little safe, doesn't seem to have the same instinct, certainly doesn't have the same, like, quick mind, I think, that Burrow and Tua have. But he's got the physical skill set. He looks kind of like a play action old school quarterback, like big arm. Like, you see these guys come out, he feels a little more old school, but he's also super athletic. And so I think that probably attracted Anthony Lynn, that he does offer something that he can, you know, be used in the running game too.
From an on-field perspective, he comes into a great situation, a team that upgraded the offensive line with a couple of guys. The defense, they had Chris Harris and Linval Joseph, and then they had the second first-round pick here in Kenneth Murray, the linebacker. This roster, I mean, admitting that there's a huge question mark at quarterback, the rest of the roster just looks like a Super Bowl contender.
The next pick was Derek Brown, the defensive tackle, goes to the Panthers, a serious area of need for Carolina, and a guy that gives them, with Kaywon Short there, a really great defensive line that will be hard to move on. Isaiah Simmons, the guy that has everybody conflicted, but a great athlete that played all over at Clemson, goes to the Cardinals at 8. This is right around the time, by the way, as a Jets fan, I'm feeling really good because these offensive linemen are not flying off the board like people expected. And then at pick 9, C.J. Henderson, the number 2 cornerback in this draft class, according to many, out of Florida, goes to the Jags, who obviously traded away Jalen Ramsey and A.J. Bouye in the past 7 months. Now they bring in the rookie Henderson with huge upside. Thoughts on those picks, guys?
I would say, go ahead, Wes.
I thought the Cardinals stand out to me for adding a blue-chip talent on both sides of the ball to get DeAndre Hopkins on offense and Simmons on defense. That, to me, that's what you want in an offseason.
Yeah, I cannot wait to see Isaiah Simmons. And I think it's whenever there's a player that has, you know, differing opinions from scouts and there's all this buzz about how do you play him and what systems does he fit in, that could be a great thing too. And I think it's an awesome landing spot. I was kind of blown away also by Cliff Kingsbury's, you know, almost Miami Vice-like palatial estate, which, you know, Dan, you made a good point. Is that in Palm Springs? It is in Arizona, I believe. But
yeah, that would make more sense. But it reminds me of some of those, if you live in California and you go on Airbnb looking for a Palm Springs house, and just for the F of it, you go look at the higher end houses in Palm Springs. Oh, that's what it looks like. And then I asked on Twitter, I said, wait, is Cliff Kingsbury a billionaire? And then I think Robert Klemko responded, dude, Arizona, you have no idea how far money goes, which is probably true. Maybe it's like a $200,000 house in Arizona. But it looked like a cartel house from Better Call
Saul. Absolutely, yeah.
He's not messing around. I don't know if it's the best fit for the Cardinals. Because you kind of look like, I wonder if Cardinals fans, and of course everyone's excited tonight, but you look at Steve Keim's draft history, he took Hassan Reddick, which was kind of the guy in that draft. It's like, doesn't have a position. He can do a lot of things, and they haven't figured out, you know, what he can actually do. And they took Deion Buchanan, who has kind of a similar skill set, and he had his moments in Arizona, but ultimately, you know, ended up not being like a huge, huge difference maker for them. And they have Vance Joseph as their defensive coordinator, who has struggled.
But he's a defensive backs guy, and I have a feeling Simmons is going to play safety. I mean, Vance Joseph might not be the best defensive coordinator in the world, but I think he knows what to do with a guy like Simmons.
Yeah, you got to have a plan for him, and hopefully they do. But they were not good on defense, and it's been a while, maybe forever, since Vance Joseph's ever coached a good defense.
All right.
I mean, right? Has he ever coached a good defense? Like, when he's the coordinator, haven't they almost always been basically a problem?
You're just mad
problem?
Because your boy Todd Bowles is the only defensive back-minded defensive Ooh. Coordinator you have time for in your life.
That's fair.
It's a strange shot, but it checks out.
And then it did, now that you bring up the move that the Cardinals made and they have DeAndre Hopkins, it reminded me as I'm watching the draft, because we won't really have a chance to bring them up again, the Houston Texans, I noticed it, you know, a theme in this draft, and it happens every year. You trade a guy, a standout veteran, or you lose him to free agency, and then you use the draft and you plug that hole with the guy you hope becomes that next guy. And we saw that with the cornerback in Jacksonville, and you saw what the Vikings did, replacing Stephon Diggs. again, if you're a Texans fan, you trade away DeAndre Hopkins, and then when you're supposed to then take a wide receiver to get all excited about tonight, you don't have a first-round pick.
Oh, no, you've got tough Brandon Cooks and Randall Cobb.
Oh, that's right. They're fine.
I mean, Dan, you're you know, half your job at NFL Network has been defending Bill O'Brien, so you took a strange left turn right there, but I totally agree with your analysis.
CJ Henderson is a risky pick too, I think, for the Jags, like a guy people felt very differently about. And they've had a bad history, taking Florida players. They took Juwan Taylor, who's kind of been a bust for them so far, Dante Fowler a few years back. I feel like they always take these UF guys and they don't work out.
It's an old-time expression, Mark, but I call it like I see it. I believed in Bill O'Brien, and then he started doing things that I didn't believe in anymore.
Mm. I mean, you also, you know, you have immense gravitas now that you're hours into your fifth decade. So I will listen to anything you
decade.
Say.
Well put. All right. So then the Browns and the Jets are on the board, and they both, as expected by many, especially once the draft shook out the way it did in the first nine picks, take offensive tackles. The Browns take Jedrick Wills Jr. out of Alabama. The Jets take Mekhi Becton out of Louisville. And I texted Mark on our friend chain during the draft that nice, solid, no nonsense, no funny business picks from our teams that are usually subjects of ridicule. Hard to get down on either team for making the moves they made here.
Yeah, and I reached out to Nick Shook, who I really think is one of the better, in our sphere, better evaluators of offensive line play. Does a lot of work on that. He's written a lot of columns for NFL.com.
Can beat up offensive linemen if it came to it?
He could. I mean, he probably could step in and play for a couple of these teams. I mean, I asked him, were you surprised that they went with Wills over, you know, the other two or three options there? And he said it was his favorite of all of them, I think they're all jumbled together, and it probably depends on what type of line play or what type of offense you want. But Kevin Stefanski of the Browns also just remarked that he thought that Wills was a perfect scheme fit for the kind of offense that they want to run. And so I think the Browns are happy. And then you look at what the Jets did. And I mean, Greg mentioned it. They got a gigantic behemoth, and they needed it. And so, you know, sometimes with the draft, like, You want CeeDee Lamb, you want all these other guys that maybe fit the profile of like a super sexy like draft day pick, but if these linemen work out, they've solved immense problems for both teams.
He's 6'7", 364 pounds, and at the combine,
that's like three of Greg and me put together.
At the combine, he ran a 5.140, and I thought Connor Hughes of The Athletic had a tweet that got me excited. Becton doesn't have the potential to be good. He has the potential to be an all-world player. You don't find guys that big with that kind of athleticism. There's a little bit of risk. He got flagged for a drug test of some kind at the combine, which, you know, that is on my radar a little bit.
That all depends what kind of drug. I mean, that's, you know.
Right. That's true, too.
A wide variety of options there.
It was the drug that's legal here in California, so I don't think people were too worried. Yeah.
You're talking about marijuana?
Little weed.
You can say it.
Little weed. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm excited. I'm happy with that pick. And now, hopefully, at least for the Jets, I don't know what the Browns do next, that wide receiver that you want, I hope you get that in the middle of the second round. We'll see. Good job, Joe Douglas. Let us move on. So Mark and I are happy. We're feeling good. Weird that our organizations, by the way, Mark, are in this trajectory where 3 years ago we were celebrating drafting our quarterbacks, and now they both draft the left tackle that's supposed to protect their quarterbacks for the next decade. Maybe these teams will start winning now. That would be great.
Well, I would say, right, it's not, here we are, it's April. 6 months from now, are they going to be 0-4 and utter disasters? Or can they change the story a little bit?
Change the story. All right. The first wide receiver comes off the board. So the Raiders, the draft could not work out better for them. A team that was a desperate need, as we talked about, for a wide receiver. When they pick at 12, they don't have to move, and they get to pick any wide receiver they want coming out of college. They go with Henry Ruggs out of Alabama, guy with speed. He's a guy that he's exactly what this team needed after the Antonio Brown fiasco, Wes. Your thoughts on this move? It's hard to knock it.
Yeah, it made me think it was a Gruden pick, that this is the kind of guy that Gruden would love to scheme up and do all the stuff before the snap that the Chiefs do with Tyreek Hill. And my second thought was, I hope he's more like Tyreek Hill and less like Brandon Cooks.
Mm.
Brandon Cooks was pretty damn good before those injuries started.
He is, but Brandon Cooks is a guy we all thought coming into the league was going to be a guy you can use close to the line of scrimmage, okay, like Percy Harvin, and break tackles and do all that stuff. And he ended up being more of a strict downfield guy. And I think when you draft a guy like this, you want to be able to do both. You want to do the downfield stuff and the pre-snap behind the line of scrimmage stuff.
I mean, his speed and his, like, you know, quickness to get off the line is going to rival anyone in the NFL. I mean, it might, you know, it'll be there with Tyreek Hill, and he's had good hands, and so that's why he goes first. And of course, the Raiders know a million things more than me. It's just weird to look at, like, you know, the box score from the Alabama season and see that Henry Ruggs was their third receiver and had 750 yards and had like 500 yards less than Devontae Smith and 500 yards less than Jerry Jeudy, and he just had so much less production, and he's like a return guy, and it'll probably work out, and at the very least he has like a very defined skill set that they're going to use. But that, I don't know, that weirds me out a little bit, the receivers that come in and that everyone's like, well, they got return ability too. Like, that's where you get into trouble with Ted Ginn and Cordarrelle Patterson and other guys at the top of the draft that have a lot of speed.
Right. Who had this as the number one wideout coming off the board? I mean, I know he, you know, Ruggs picked up steam definitely later in the process, but I viewed this as a pretty big upset. But then there's Mike Mayock, and you know, he definitely is someone that when he falls for a player, I mean, he's committed to it. And Wes, maybe you're right. Maybe this is a Gruden fetish as well.
Al Davis would love this pick. It's a very much a Raiders pick. And like all the draft Knicks, like DJ, had him as like a top 12 player. So it wasn't too crazy. It's just weird to see a guy that didn't produce nearly as much as his teammates. I don't know. That would weird me out.
What could be deemed crazy, and we'll get to it, is the second Raiders pick, which was the one. There's always one where the draft Knicks are left scratching their head a little bit, and we'll get to that in a little bit. At 13, like I said, no trades in the first 12 picks, but then it starts with the Buccaneers, who trade with the 49ers were at 13. Is that correct? And they trade with the Bucs. So the Bucs move up one spot. And that actually was it's something I was kind of legitimately curious about. If you're drafting 14th in the first round, you move up one pick. What should that cost you? What's the price? What would be an acceptable price to move up one pick in the middle of the first round of a draft? What would you guess if no one told you what the terms were?
$300.
Well, it depends which pick, but yeah, in the middle.
It's Mark's first draft.
In the middle of the round.
It's a fourth round pick. It costs you a fourth round pick in this case. Anyway, so the Tampa Bay at $300. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, three rocks, Danny. They select Tristan Wirfs, the other offensive tackle of the big four that everybody was talking about. So the Bucs, man, they're having a flashy offseason, because not only they get Tom Brady and Gronk, now they make a trade and get one of these big four linemen. Good for them. So they get a tackle, and then the Niners, they stay at 14 and draft Javon Kinlaw, the big defensive tackle. Some people thought they would take a wide receiver here. They take the defensive tackle. Your thoughts, gentlemen?
I love the way the 49ers played this, knowing that they wanted Kinlaw, and then looking at Tampa's roster and saying, though they have Ndamukong Suh and Vita Vea, they're not going defensive tackle here. So let's just pick up a free mid-round pick and get the same guy we were after. And on the flip side,
brilliant.
I like that the Bucs got this guy. He's a good player, but as it turned out, they didn't have to trade up for him.
Well, maybe the 49ers convinced them that someone else was moving up to that spot. You know, Lynch might say, oh, I've gotten one call to get something. Who knows if he head faked him. It couldn't have worked out more perfectly for the Bucs, because they need a right tackle. And they're going to play Wirfs, they said, at right tackle. And, you know, unlike the Browns pick, he doesn't have to move sides. He seemed like the safer, more pro-ready, like pass protection guy. And they are in all in for 2 years with Tom Brady mode. So the Jets guy has a lot more upside. You don't have to change positions, but like, this seemed like the safer pick, because they just need to, you know, get it going for 2020. They can't wait around.
A lot of people thought the Giants would go after Wirfs way up at, you know, number four. So I love
these guys know what they're talking about, these draft guys, because that's right. What they said. They said there's really going to be no way to judge who's going to be taken out of those four guys, because it's a complete like jumble in terms of who's the best guy. And that's exactly how it turned out, it seems.
Yep. I'm with Greg, though. I think that maybe the Bucs felt that it wasn't that, oh, we think the Niners are going to take our tackle at all, but that someone else might have, and they had pinpointed him. And, you know, they showed Bruce Arians and his Homestead, and he looks super chill and super pleased with what went down. So I don't think they have a problem, you know, giving away whatever it costs them to get up in that spot. I love this. Bucks offseason is insane. And like, I joke about that they're going to have 9 primetime games, but I can't think of a more fascinating team right now. And someone made a great point. Someone DM'd me and said, it's too bad they already picked Hard Knocks, because this would never happen. But the best Hard Knocks combo ever would be not the Chargers and the Rams, but the Patriots and the Bucks. That would be fascinating to watch.
Just Arians,
no combos.
Arians and Brady would be great. Just and Gronk, yeah. And that would be fun. The 49ers making this pick too. I like it when teams just like they make the same picks all the time. Like they're just into certain sort of players. Like Kinlaw is very much in their mold of defensive linemen that they take a replacement for DeForest Buckner. And then with their second pick that they traded back up into the round to get their receiver, they took Brandon Ayuk, who's like exactly like all of their other receivers. He was the one guy I saw that I didn't quite get, but he's like he looks like a running back playing wide receiver, a run after the catch guy who's just like Hurd and Debo Samuel, and like that, you know, they brought in Pierre Garçon, like Pierre Garçon wannabes, and they just keep taking the same guys over and over, and that's what they do, and you got to try to stop them.
Well, the knock on Ayuk was that he only runs like 3 routes. The same ones that all of Kyle Shanahan's wide receivers run. I mean, that guy schemes wide receivers open better than anybody, so I don't even know if route running's as important for a 49ers receiver as it is for other teams.
Mentioned Hard Knocks, by the way. I did broach it with our features editor, Ali Bunpuri, the idea of walking away from the Hard Knocks recaps this year as a sign of protest with the decision to go with the 2 LA teams. Little pushback, so I'll keep you guys updated how that goes.
Yeah, I think I suspect his move, you know, I feel like is like, well, we can just have someone else write it.
Well, that would be fine, but okay. That's not what he said initially.
Okay.
Said, I don't know about that. Let's talk about this again after the draft.
How would you feel, Dan, if you were allowed off the assignment and Wes just picked it up as his pet project in August?
Be fine.
For you.
Yeah, Dan's fine with this. Yeah, we've heard Dan's takes on Hard Knocks. I would like to hear Wes.
Well, I've yet to survive past the 3rd episode of any season of the show, so I doubt that would they want me on it.
How dare you?
All right, moving on. Jerry Jeudy goes to the Denver Broncos with the 15th overall pick. John Elway really feeling himself in the shots of his fisherman's cabin, wherever the hell Johnny was, but he got his wide receiver, and he seemed very happy with the pick. And considering Jeudy was the guy that some people thought would go first among the wide receivers, getting him in the middle of the first round, you understand why Mr. Elway was so pumped up.
Well, yeah, he said after the draft that Jeudy was the number one guy on their board. I don't know if that's clear whether he was talking wide receivers or overall, but I'm a sucker for a Denver team. And I love their offseason.
This is the team of the West DL.
I like that you're embracing it now, Wes. You know, after a little bit of pushback at first.
Both of the teams that burned me hard last year, the Cowboys and Broncos, I loved what they did in the draft. The Cowboys getting CeeDee Lamb, a guy who Jerry Jones said was number 6 overall on their board. And I'm kind of interested to see what they would have done had he not been there. It sounded like they were studying cornerbacks and may have gone in that direction. But back to the Broncos, I just really like their offseason. You pair him with Melvin Gordon. They picked up Graham Glasgow to solidify their offensive line, and they get Jarrell Casey and AJ Bouye on defense.
I mean, go ahead,
Greg.
Ooh, well, we were due to do it. It's the old go ahead.
It's always
old,
Mark. It's
the
always
old remote
Mark.
Trick.
You do
all right,
it, Mark.
Greg is
you
pointing at me. I was convinced Denver. You know, and at this point, every single team in the league was whispered about as wanting to move up or down. So, I mean, it's all irrelevant. But I thought Denver was ripe and would have to move up to get this player. And there were a couple teams today where the perfect player fell to them without any movement. Yeah. I don't remember too many drafts like that where the lack of trade activity didn't leave me thinking that teams weren't aggressive enough just because of who landed in their laps.
You know how you guys get annoyed with like the NFC East, the Giants and Cowboys getting too much love? My version of that is football pundits falling over themselves to compliment John Elway whenever possible. So another big night for those people.
It's back. It's back because this team is fun. You know, you had the Broncos trading up in your mock, Mark. I know we'll get to that later for Jerry Jeudy.
Right.
But you're right. Like, for him to be able to pair Jeudy with Courtland Sutton, that is a badass duo. Jeudy, to me, seemed like the highest upside and the safest guy, because like you just like watch him run routes, he's gonna, you know, make Matt Harmon go nuts. Like, in a worst case scenario, like, this guy can get open, is gonna be like a Stevie Johnson or Santonio Holmes, and he could be a, I don't know, he could be a lot better. Him and Sutton next to each other, it's like, it's not setting up for the Drew Lock doubters like me very well, because he's just like in a great situation.
Well, he's still got to make the throws though.
Yeah,
I, you know, that's another conversation.
Well, it's not a podcast without you throwing shade at Drew Lock, so I'm happy to hear.
He made plenty of those throws last year. I thought
I'm not even a doubter.
No reason to have concerns there.
I'm not even a doubter at all. I just want to see more. It was like five games that were good. They were fine.
Yeah. They were fine, and I think everybody knows it could go either way. But if you listen to this show on a weekly basis, it can only go poorly.
Well, now he has no excuses, Wes. The expectations are through the roof.
Just saying, it might be smart. It might behoove Mr. Elway to have a backup plan.
I agree with that. You got to get a better backup.
All right. The Atlanta Falcons take A.J. Terrell out of Clemson, the cornerback at 16. I feel like we dug into the draft a little harder this year as a podcast than we have in recent years. And all of these things are lining up in terms of what we talked about, how we had heard the Falcons wanted to move up potentially to get into the Jeff Okuda sweepstakes. They needed a guy in their secondary to replace Desmond Trufant. They get that in A.J. Terrell or Terrell? Anybody?
Terrell. It was as chalk a top 16 picks, I think, as I've ever covered.
Absolutely.
It's the opposite of what everyone said, where it's like, oh, it's going to be crazy. No, it was exactly how a lot of mock drafts look.
And speaking of chalk, at 18, the Dolphins get Austin Jackson. Everyone thought that they were going to get a tackle with Tua on board, and they get Jackson, who is thought to be the next tier after those big four. But it was the pick in between that was interesting, because the Dallas Cowboys, they take C.D. Lamb, who in the minds of many, in the Jets, were mocked to C.D. Lamb by a lot of people, myself included, at number 11. So he ends up being the third wide receiver off the board. And now, Chris Wessling, you have a situation where the Dallas Cowboys, sometimes it feels like this organization is building a fantasy team to me, because now you bring in another huge target, a talented target for Dak Prescott to work with, Amari Cooper, C.D. Lamb. That is pretty good stuff with, of course, Zeke Elliott in the backfield.
Oh, I love the pick, and I saw Daniel Jeremiah said something similar, that he loves the fit, and it's a guy who can play inside or outside. They needed a slot receiver with Randall Cobb leaving, but I do think an interesting way to look at it is, would they have signed Amari Cooper had they known CeeDee Lamb would be available? Mm. And I think the answer is no. I don't.
Really?
I think they would have allocated the resources elsewhere if they knew they could get CeeDee Lamb.
But
many people think is the best receiver in the draft.
Isn't it better to have
the logic, right?
Isn't it better to have three great receivers? I feel like you
need... Sure, but is it also better to have two really good receivers and then fix another problem? Get a cornerback? I don't know.
When we were talking about when Amari Cooper was headed toward free agency and there was this thought, what are the Cowboys going to do? Because they're in a bit of a bind financially, potentially, if they give this guy a huge contract, and then they went and did that. The theory for letting him walk was then finding his replacement, again, which happens in this league all the time, in our league, in the draft. So, yeah, that's exactly how it turned out. But they ended up paying him $1 trillion. So they are pretty set up there. This is this is going to be a loaded offense. And, you know, Dak Prescott, if he doesn't end up signing that long-term deal, it's going to be a really interesting season with him, because they're basically going to have – I know the offensive line maybe isn't what it was a couple years ago, but he will have as good a setup as anybody in the league, and he'll be expected to have a huge season, which will only put more pressure on him. It's an already a pressure-filled situation as quarterback of the Cowboys.
There's also immense pressure on Mike McCarthy suddenly. I mean, he's walked into most first-year Right, there you go.
Forgot about it.
How many coaches walk into a first-year situation with this kind of offense? I mean, usually you go in there because who was there before led to a total train wreck, and you're walking into a bit of a rebuilding project. Mike McCarthy does not have many excuses for them to do anything less than go about 11-5 or 12-4.
But he's got the, I mean, at least offensively, he's got the players, you know.
What about defensively?
No, I don't think they do. I don't think they do on defense. But it's a big win for Tom Pelissero. I mean, he puts out that feature, gets McCarthy hired, and McCarthy's going to have a revenge tour through this league. I mean, Lamb Cooper and Gallup complement each other very well. That is like a if Lamb is who he's supposed to be, he was DJ's top receiver, kind of a run after the catch guy in the middle. I mean, that those three all fit together really nicely.
Gallup had 1,100 yards, right. 17 yards a reception and 6 touchdowns last year. I mean, I get it. And I get the idea that CeeDee Lamb is a guy who can be a star. But was this a real position of need for the Cowboys in relation to other parts of their roster?
I think it felt like
it's a very Cowboys move. It's a very Jerry Jones move.
He's taken a lot of
the DNA of what they do.
He's taken a lot of big names.
Every year, take the best player available. We always say that. I mean, that's what pays off in the long run.
It felt like that's right around where the draft got less sexy, I guess. Like where there was a big drop off in talent, they kind of took the last big name. And they've done that before with guys that for whatever reason have fallen in drafts, and Jerry takes the biggest name guy there is.
Funny you should say that, Wes, because I mentioned, of course, Austin Jackson to the Dolphins. That was a pick for need. Then the Raiders have a supreme pick for need. They needed cornerback help. The best guys were off the board. They take Damon Arnett at Ohio State. This is a guy that had been mocked. I think DJ said something crazy. He was his number 15 cornerback. It was something really surprising.
He had him 59th overall. I did go check that just to, try to stoke some NFL Network analyst on analyst heat, know, in my winners and losers, just saying Mayock versus Jeremiah, who's going to be right here?
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. But so he was a guy that was expected to go tomorrow or even maybe on Saturday. Instead, he goes at pick 19. So the Raiders and the Mayock Gruden regime surprised people last year when they took Cleveland Farrell early, and that didn't work out so well, at least as a rookie. And now they have Arnett as their second first-rounder here, and we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I kept reading that he's basically a knucklehead, and then to hear he's Chris Carter's son, the son of a knucklehead. Chris Carter, who went to the Hall of Fame, but early in his career, knuckleheaded his way out of Philadelphia.
Come on, Wes. Put some respect on that man. Best hand and boundary man of all time.
Absolutely, but he did work his way out of Philadelphia because of attitude issues.
And, I mean, this is a player that they talked about walking away from college football a year ago. So, I mean, look, the Seahawks have been celebrated for seeing things differently in the draft. Not that they've hit on all
not
those
by
picks,
their fans lately, but yeah.
No, but I'm saying, but early on, that was an early staple of John Schneider was they're going to zig when you think they're going to go in the other direction. And Mayock is proving to be similar. And, we'll tell. I mean, I don't really care what people think tonight about it. They know a lot more about the player than most people that were shocked by the pick. So we'll see.
In fairness to Chris Carter, he was an addict. He was a cocaine user and an alcoholic in those Eagles days.
Well,
he conquered those demons.
That's fair?
No, I'm saying it wasn't just he was a knucklehead. He actually had a problem.
Generally not what you want in a wide receiver, though.
I know. I thought it was a line. One's if you're a Trumaine Johnson type guy. That's one type of knucklehead.
Right.
The other one is if you're actually dealing with some demons.
Right. To Mark's point, the story that he basically stopped showing up, to school, but because he probably thought he was going to go pro, but it wasn't really going to make sense last year. That's one way to look at it. But by all accounts, his number one attribute is his competitiveness, that he's a dog. That DJ said that's why he had him as high as he was, that he doesn't seem overly talented, but he's insanely competitive, which is seemingly what Mayock keeps taking guys like that.
Can we bring in Erica a second? Hey, Ricky, this is a primetime podcast. So I think it's fair to touch on some mature themes here.
Yeah.
You had mentioned in the messaging section of our setup here that your upstairs neighbors are a little busy. And that's a theme connected to this podcast because, Mark, you had a similar thing with your Motel 6 room.
Mm. Well, that's right. Yeah. I want to hear about the current situation.
So what's the status right now?
Yeah, current situation is I was I took my headphones off and I was what the heck is that? There's a little bit of,
You easy with the words here. We got to be safe still.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kids listening in cars.
Your video was shaking a little. You thought there might have been another little aftershock, like an earthquake hit.
Yeah, like I was getting vibrations all the way down here.
What was the, on the Richter scale, what were the vibrations?
It was loud and powerful enough that I had to take my headphones off, being like,
7.5?
Well,
7.7?
Yeah.
How long was the earthquake going on for?
It's been going for a while, but there's a couple questions that I have up in the air. It just seems one-sided.
Oh, no.
So I'm confused. I'll report back if I can get any more information.
Is that area of the building known for natural disasters?
Yes.
One-sided earthquake.
But really? Normally it's two-sided, but the girlfriend's car hasn't been in the garage for a long time. So think what, they...
Is that an expression or...
No, like I think they broke up. Like I think that the girlfriend is no longer in the picture. Mm. So
this is new.
Are you saying maybe it's just him up there?
I only recognize one voice, and there's like no voices, no kind of.
All right, well, keep us updated.
Okay,
I don't miss sharing walls with other people.
You know
what I mean? Like that's one thing I don't miss.
There's something to look forward to, Ricky. When you get in your 30s, eventually you will move on. Hopefully, even before your 30s. To a place with your own walls and you don't have to worry about those things anymore. Cause it was annoying.
I mean, it's not a roommate. I happen to live in a building. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like Cliff Kingsbury's not dealing with this issue. I mean, maybe he would be personally, but I mean, not through a wall.
I lived above a bar with a child on Second Avenue. That was a bad idea.
Wow.
that the Cliff Kingsbury thing is still sitting with me a little weird. I'm not saying it's like a bad thing.
He took that photo or like had someone take that photo.
Here's the only negative thing.
I know you're going to say, oh, what a flex by Cliff Kingsbury. But it's like, I don't know, man. And he's wearing his little like Versace loafers.
Yep.
Like, I want my football coaches with big guts. I don't want them looking like Bruce Arians. Like, they haven't slept in 7 months and they live in a dark room for 10 months a year. I don't want you looking like you're out of a GQ ad, like GQ Arizona.
I've got a better taste in interior decoration than other coaches do.
I don't want my coaches to have good taste in interior decoration.
No, Kevin Stefanski, who's flat out hot. I mean, Kevin Stefanski is just flat out an attractive man. I'll take that over a big tubby guy that's rolling around like a big barrel.
How about
Wait a second, but you love Freddie Kitchens, and he was basically the opposite side of this.
I'd like to go to a bar with Freddie Kitchens. I think he hit the Peter principle pretty hard last year.
Mm. How about what did you think of Belichick and his like sandals in Nantucket beach house that they showed him in tonight?
Yawn.
I love how
book it to trade out of the first round. I mean, what was their plan this evening?
Please. I just love how
at least a dozen times you found Bill Belichick to be an attractive man.
I think that
yes,
we are off.
I don't think he's unattractive.
About the 90s version,
but well, that's fine. But I'm just saying that in today's world, when we're looking at all these younger coaches, Bill Belichick's not doing it for me on the hotness scale.
That sounds like what Dan wants out of a coach, though.
You know, I was just gonna say that I'm just so happy how irrelevant the Patriots are now. But, you know, now that I'm in my 40s, I don't want to be petty like that anymore. So I'm not going to say it.
Oh, you crossed that threshold today alone. Okay.
There's no way this could come back to bite you. It is like the most classic Patriots thing, though, to trade out of the first round in this
Absolutely.
Draft.
Absolutely.
We talked about it.
You're not special anymore.
The point where, you know, we were all texting the entire show. None of us, when they traded out, none of us even texted each other because it's like.
Snore.
Every time. So
that's what they do. They have 4 third round picks. No one loves a third round pick.
We don't matter anymore.
Than the Patriots.
All right, let's move to the 20s. The Jacksonville Jaguars take Ke'Lavon Chaisson out of LSU, outside linebacker. The Eagles, they do address the wide receiver position, which we were all demanding they did. I think we were all starting to get a little annoyed with the Eagles. Do something. Get somebody in there to help out.
Colleen was annoyed, yeah.
Carson Wentz. Colleen actually saw the... She texted me, and Colleen's getting loose. She originally was maybe going to be involved with today's show, but she was getting so loose and enjoying herself after a hard day's work. She did a great job in the lead up to the draft on NFL Network. That I was like, don't worry about it, Connie. Just relax. But she was sending some texts during the draft, and she mentioned that she thought CeeDee Lamb to the Cowboys was essentially Jared just raising two middle fingers at the Eagles.
Yeah.
That it just felt like that.
That checks out to me.
So the Eagles have to settle for Jalen Reagor, who, by the way, from TCU, is a guy that people seem to really like. And he's a quick receiver. He's a guy that knows how to get open. And damn it, does Carson Wentz need a guy that knows how to get open and make some plays?
I thought he was maybe the boom or bust guy of that receiver group. Like, if you just put his 10 best plays together, I think he might look like the most explosive player in the draft. His return ability was insane. Like, his deep ball ability was insane. He had, like, bad quarterbacks around him. But there was concerns about whether, you know, he was that consistent a worker. His hands were a little up and down. Like, there were a little bit of red flags where it looks like he's a boomer bust guy. But he reminds you a lot of DeSean Jackson, except, like, 20 pounds bigger and can jump and go out and get the ball. Felt like a swing for the fences type of pick, which is what we wanted out of him.
The Laquon Treadwell season, I think it was the 2016 draft, it was right around this time in the first round where I think three wideouts went in a row. And I think, did any of those three guys make it? Does anybody remember that class? But it ended up being underwhelming. So we have Reagor goes to the Eagles, and then in 22, Justin Jefferson, the wideout, goes to the Vikings, who replaced Stephon Diggs with the guy that led the NCAA in receptions last season. So the Vikings fill a need, and now these two guys are linked together, and we'll find out which of these two NFC teams picked the right guy.
One note, those three receivers were Will Fuller, Josh Dotson, and Treadwell.
Okay, yeah. So Fuller
is two of the three. No, thank you.
Good one, healthy. But the other guys, yeah.
The other guys have both been cut.
Yeah, they did not work out. Anyway, so both very sensible decisions for the Eagles and Vikings here.
I feel like that point about Reagor being boom or bust, that describes the whole Eagles wide receiver core. That if Alshon Jeffrey comes back healthy, if DeSean Jackson's not too old, and I forgot J.J. Arcega-Whiteside is even on the roster.
I mean, he looks – it was only
second rounder last year, right?
It was only 1 year, but it was about as bad a year as you could have. Rick Spielman, the Vikings GM, sneaky – pretty good in the draft over the years, as Wes mentioned, and getting Jefferson. I mean, people thought he was probably safer. He does a lot of the same things as Adam Thielen. Like, he's inside, and then they get Gladney, who's 31st, who's like a total Mike Zimmer, like slot cornerback, you know, feisty guy, like great instincts, and also seems like a safe pick. It like seemed like two guys that could play for them right away for a team that's in the mix.
I mean, Jefferson had 111 catches last year, which led all of college football and dominated from the slot. So I like the pick for the Vikings.
At 23, that was the Patriots spot, and Belichick trades out of it, and the Chargers slide in and take Kenneth Murray, an inside linebacker out of Oklahoma. The Chargers couldn't stop anybody on the ground last year, so this is hoping to address a need there. Murray, that is an area of expertise. And Greg, are you okay with the Pats moving out and doing the Pats thing, or was this a year maybe you would have liked to see them be more aggressive in this round?
No, I like them doing what they've always done, because it's just, I mean, it's what they do. They have four third round picks, and they have a second round? I think they have four third round picks, two or three fourth round picks, and a second round pick. It's like, that's what they'll do. You knew there was
they
a giveaway.
So many special teamers.
It was like a giveaway.
So many Matt Slaters.
Someone on the telecast said, like, and they think they're going to be able to take the same guy they would take at 37 that they were going to take at 23. So they're going to take some random dude no one's ever heard of. They might as well take him at 37.
Ricky, how are you feeling after all a traumatic, couple weeks or a month or so for Patriots fans, and now you don't even get a shiny toy under the Christmas tree?
Get him tomorrow. I mean, they moved down 14 spots.
All right, Greg. I want to hear Eric.
I know. Well,
crazy.
She's muted right now, so I'm just buying time.
No, it was exactly what Greg said. Like, I rolled eyes when it happened, but I don't know. I thought maybe something crazy would happen.
It's not just all the players in New England are brainwashed. Look at the fans too.
Bill did a nice job.
I mean,
do
if you're gonna give
first round picks to be successful,
we all wanted it. We didn't want a first round pick. We want late round picks. We want late round picks.
I wonder if they wanted Jefferson. That did cross
pick number 137 better than pick 23.
I mean, if there's ever going
to be
a guy that you would just trust what's going on and not really worry about it, why not? What the hell do I know? Logan Mankins was literally the least popular pick they've ever made.
Late round better than first round.
I love it, Wes, an impression. All right, moving on. Bye, Ricky. Saints take Cesar Ruiz, a center out of Michigan. Nice job there. The Niners from the Minnesota Vikings take.
Good job there.
Yeah, well, you know, we talked about the Saints. They don't have a glaring hole. So they go and they get a workman-like center that I guess gives them depth. And
I think they're going to trade or cut Larry Warford, who made the Pro Bowl last year. It shows you how worthless the Pro Bowl is.
He's a free agent after this season?
He has a $12 million cap figure, and apparently they weren't thrilled with him.
Mm, okay. The Niners, they trade up to 25. Is that correct?
Yep.
They take Brandon Ayuk from Arizona State, a wide receiver. Any thoughts on that, gentlemen? Before I get to the Richter
scale.
Greg
touched on
yeah,
him.
We touched on him.
Okay. Let's and then the late pick of the draft that kind of got everybody titillated, the Green Bay Packers with the 26th pick in the draft, they trade up to take Jordan Love, quarterback, Utah State. And we talked about Jordan Love in the past couple of weeks. Brian Gutekunst, the onions on this guy. He makes the decision. It's the first time this has ever happened. A decision made with the post-Aaron Rodgers Green Bay Packers in mind. Wes, isn't it funny how life works?
Yeah, I went through all the cliches, like the tables have turned, the shoe's on the other foot, what goes around comes around, what's good for the goose is good for the gander, Spider-Man meme, but Rodgers got farmed. And I'm like, I'm thinking Father Time is a I mean, not just for Rodgers, but the fact that I thought I was a young man when all that happened with Favre and Rodgers, and now it's happening to the same guy in the other way around. Mm. To me, it's like classic Greek theater. Like,
how
just
about
to
this,
see
Wes?
The tempest that Rodgers is under now.
It's happening to Rodgers later in his career than it happened when it was Favre. Favre was 35 when Rodgers came aboard, and Aaron Rodgers is now 36.
It is wild. I think that there is one difference here, that Favre was threatening retirement at that age. And Rodgers doesn't want anything to do with that. This is his team.
Well, what is the plan here? I it just feels like an incredibly disruptive pull of the trigger. if you've got a quarterback who's very right. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is like nothing if not a little quirky. I mean, this does not feel like the guy that's gonna. No, we don't know. But it's not the first guy I'd pick in the power rankings of like coddling number one quarterback who wants to embrace young quarterback who's just been drafted in the first round after the team traded up for him.
Rodgers put Brett Favre on blast in a way and made it known that Favre was not a very good dude to him. So let's see what kind of integrity Rodgers has now, because we'll find out. It will leak if this is not a good relationship between these two guys. But then from Rodgers, in defense of Rodgers, I hate it. I mean, I hate it if I'm Aaron Rodgers. Like, you gave me this huge contract. You bring in this coach that's going to help me get back to the way I was. We get to the NFC title game. It's clear that we need some pieces. And then instead of using your first round pick on something that improves the roster in 2020, you take my replacement? Like, I get why he would be super mad. Like, it made me think of the Better Call Saul finale, spoiler alert ahead, when Lalo sees that his Abuelito was gunned down in the compound raid, and you just see him angrily stalk off screen as the season ends. Aaron Rodgers is furious right now.
Ooh.
And you know all the beat guys are trying to get in touch with him, and they want something on the record, and maybe he says the right thing, maybe he says nothing at all, but he is furious, and I totally get it.
Yeah, we got to get Bob McGinn back on the phone because I'd love to hear his thoughts
on
this.
Bob was not talking about
dynamic.
Aaron Rodgers.
I mean,
we could have talked to Bob for 20 minutes about Aaron Rodgers. He wouldn't have said anything.
They didn't just, you know, draft Rodgers' replacement like because he fell to him. They traded up for him.
Traded up.
They gave up a mid-round pick in this year's draft to go get him, and they didn't just take anyone. They took the only guy in the last couple of drafts that can go on the field and maybe throw the ball as well as Aaron Rodgers, at least as hard, like who has maybe just like Aaron Rodgers compared. Aaron Rodgers would have been the only guy when Brett Favre was around that could have come in and actually been a physical match for him. Jordan Love is nothing if not like a physical freak. I think he's got a lot more red flags than Mahomes did, you know, coming into the league, or Rodgers did coming into the league in terms of decision making and accuracy and all that. But like, his arm and his athleticism are outrageous, and you know it's going to make Rodgers up his game, and he's has a lot of guaranteed money in the next couple of years in terms of like they can't really get rid of. He's going to be there for two more years, and then it gets crazy.
Dan, so, you said that you would have hated this if you were Rodgers, but you're the first person I thought of. This is the kind of drama that you can really enjoy. Sit back and enjoy.
Yeah. I love it. I'm going to sink my teeth into this for 3 years.
It's your birthday present from the Packers, and it's a nice one.
It's so much fun. I mean, that's what I love about sports, but especially covering the NFL on a daily basis, that it's all soap opera, and the draft is a huge payoff. It's like a season finale in its own way, and this is crazy. And Jordan Love, I wonder if Jordan Love is kind of bummed out right now, because not only does he – the Packers are a great organization, but you're playing in Wisconsin. It's cold all the time and dark. And you're
he's coming from Utah, so you know.
Yeah. Your teammate is Aaron Rodgers, one of the greatest quarterbacks ever, but a well known kind of prickly personality who might be very unhappy about the situation. And on top of it, Aaron Rodgers is not going anywhere anytime soon. So there's a very good chance you could end up getting redshirted for at least two seasons. So that doesn't seem like a great situation for the kid.
That said, they always use Aaron Rodgers as the example of someone that was helped by sitting for a little while.
Was he, though, or was he just stuck behind an all-time great?
I'm just saying, I mean, you could look at Patrick Mahomes and say, if it's 2 years, that feels like a long time. But if this thing progresses more quickly, but it's one season or two, and, you know, he has a chance to learn, because I don't think he's a totally finished product based on what they say about him. I don't know if I hate that for Love, but it is a weird, it's just the dynamic. The Packers created something that they did not need to create. They must love this guy. I mean, I find it amazingly dramatic and sensational from that angle. I love it.
I think they must have. I thought the same thing as you, Dan. And they had Jordan Love on ESPN afterwards. Actually, he seemed elated. So he didn't betray any anxiety about it. He seemed elated to be with them and to learn from.
Well,
Aaron
he's a millionaire
Rodgers.
Now too. He's right, going in the first round,
and he probably is a guy like they. It really was a luxury pick and like a rare opportunity that they must have thought, because he seems like a guy who, if he's going to have any chance to take advantage of all that skills, like he really can't. He really does need to sit for a while, so it's great for him, and you know, maybe to your theory about Rodgers and the eye of the tiger, who knows, maybe they're trying to stoke the fire.
Ooh, that's interesting. I like that.
I kind of doubt that, though, based on his reputation, you know. I don't know.
I mean,
it's an expensive way to go. I mean, if that's what they're trying to do, there are other ways to get there.
I mean, we have now reached a world where we need to check in on Aaron Rodgers' contract. See how many more years are guaranteed, when they can get out of the deal. We have entered that phase now of his career in Green Bay, and we'll see how it plays out. You know, the beat writers love it. They are. I'm looking at Rob Domofsky of ESPN. Now Rodgers will have to decide whether he will freeze out Love or help him.
I do want to throw out, someone actually asked him in the lead up to the draft on his normal radio show, what would you do if they took a first round pick, and he gave the perfect answer. He's like, well, of course you'd like to see them add, but I would welcome anyone to the building and help them out and whatever.
So Rodgers said that.
Rodgers said that, yeah. He's on the record.
About a quarterback?
He did, yeah. It was kind of amazing. I think it was Jason Wilde, I hope I'm not wrong, who tweeted it out, but he had a long quote on a radio show from April talking about this exact scenario.
I love it. As a Green Bay Packers Ford Field 65-yard Hail Mary to get Aaron Rodgers' eye of the tiger back. Ooh. Take a quarterback late in the first round. Trade up to get
picture.
Him. Oh, this is going to be great. All right, let's finish up the first round. Jordan Brooks, inside linebacker out of Texas Tech, goes to the Seahawks at 27, at 28. Also, I wonder if the Packers needed to trade up to get Jordan Love. I guess we'll never know. At 28, the Ravens take Patrick Queen, inside linebacker out of LSU. I feel like LSU, there's like 14 guys drafted out of that
Alabama
college.
And LSU.
At 29, the Titans take Isaiah Wilson, a tackle out of Georgia. Any thoughts on those picks, gentlemen?
I think the Patrick Queen, and I anyone on defense that the Ravens drafted, I would just ticket for a rookie Pro Bowl year. I think they're absolutely delighted that Patrick Queen fell to them. I had them taking a different linebacker in my mock because I think it's a position of need, and I just I can't think of a team in the league that I trust more to grow young players on defense. They do it over and over, so it's a great landing spot for Patrick Queen.
I love that the Seahawks always take a guy that they're fans and no one else has ever heard of. Like in the first round, like it's the 27th pick, it's the Seahawks taking some guy you don't know.
At 30, the Dolphins take a cornerback. I'm going to go for it. Noah Igbignagene.
Nailed it.
A cornerback out of Auburn. The Vikings take a cornerback. Jeff Gladney.
We touched on both of those guys.
And then the Chiefs in the final pick of... Oh, if we were doing sandwiches in this one, this would have killed anybody who said no running back gets taken in the first round because they take Clyde Edwards Hilaire out of LSU again. So they have, you know, the Chiefs have some depth back there running back, but maybe they needed a more dynamic guy that to place behind Patrick Mahomes. He joins a crew of Damian Williams, Darrell Williams, DeAndre Washington, Darwin Thompson. So we'll see how all that shakes out. But, you know, as a first round pick, Clyde the Glide's going to get some run.
The Chiefs are scary. I think the rest of the AFC, you're already checking under your bed for Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid before you turn out the lights at night.
Right.
And now you get a guy who looks like some unholy mashup of Darren Sproles and Priest Holmes. I mean, all they talk about is receiving ability, and he led the SEC in forced missed tackles and yards after contact as a rusher. And 15 out of the 32 picks were SEC. I mean, that conference was loaded.
Go
ahead, Mark.
He was an incredible, as you said, receiver. He's immediately going to be one of the higher ranked fantasy football prospects. Like, he's going to be a top 30 fantasy pick at least, if not like a top 15 or 20, because he's going to be a Chiefs running back that catches 70 passes. Like, it seems like such a safe pick by the Chiefs.
That was one of my round one takeaways, that these AFC West, I'm so happy to hear the kind of party line now is, how are these teams in the AFC West, how are they going to try to keep up and close the distance on the Chiefs? It used to be the Patriots for 20 years, and that was a very annoying thing to hear all the time. Now the Chiefs are that team that are the superpower, the champion, and the Chargers go get a quarterback they hope turns into a star at 6. The Raiders get a wide receiver with their first pick in Ruggs, and then the Broncos get Jerry Jeudy. So there's an idea here that we're the only chance we have to beat the Chiefs the way they're set up right now is to score points. And we have a better chance of just getting to shootouts than trying to draft guys to stop what might be an unstoppable offense.
Doesn't it remind you of the Bill Polian Colts with Peyton Manning, where they just keep loading up on offense every year? Like, let's just keep adding to our strengths.
And this is Joseph Addai. You know, like, maybe it's not going to, like, wow you, but he's going to just be racking up yards and catches. They're going to be insane.
All right, Mark. So that's the first round, and we're going to go through the rest of the draft on Saturday night. Your mock draft, we've been talking about this last year. I call it a soft launch last year's mock draft. Our goal here is to build you into an industry mainstay in this realm, a superpower, a guy that maybe, just maybe, we could spin off and maybe break off on our own and have maybe our own kind of website. And then you would have a whole section of the website as the Draft Insider. And all of a sudden, we kind of have a portfolio for our website. So this was the big year.
Breaking some news here.
And I think that you had a really good year two. I think it was great. The goal was 9, and we came very close to 9 out of 32.
Yeah, I mean, after pick 18, I had 8, and I was feeling good. Although I will admit that when you get past 18, or, you know, you're dealing with the back end of these mocks, I couldn't have picked half of these people out of a lineup. But at the same time, you felt like you just had to hit one more. I would say this. Last year, I believe I got two right, which was absurd.
Two out of 32?
I believe that's what it was. That it was that. I mean, you're correctly predicting who's going to go in the first round.
A lot of chalk this year. A lot of chalk.
Right, not with the right team. So here's the way I view it. I went from 2 to 8. That's 2 times 4 is 8. And I'll help you out with the math here. So next year, 8 times 4 is 32. So next year is going to be absolute gold fever. But
you're calling your shot. Perfect. You're going for
well. That might not be. Yeah, I'm saying, you know, if we're going to exponentially.
You're going to be the GM of the Raiders if you do that.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's like, you know, the future is bright. This is not a 2-year project. Like you said, this is going to become its own, you know, money making cottage industry inside this Sessler household. So
put it this way.
Here we are. Yeah.
We needed growth in year two. We got it. Are we certain the mock draft's going to come back as a podcast next year at this point? No, we're not sure. But will your mock draft return? Yes, it will. Is it going to keep getting its own episode? I don't know. But
I would say there's a strong if I have any say in how the show is run at all, it will be returning.
Well, it kind of didn't get its own episode this year. Yeah, Gronk retired and upstaged.
But if you want it, we said 9 things correct. I mean, I'm not trying to pull one of these old sandwich tricks where I'm trying to convince you that I got 9 because I got 8.
Awesome this year. This was a great year.
You throw in Gronk, that's 9. I'm just going to tell you that. But it is 8 in terms of the draft, and I have to work on, you know, maybe doing a little bit more homework where I don't fall totally off a cliff over the last, 13 picks of round one, look where, you know, I went 0 for 13.
Look what you just did for yourself. Congratulations. You just gave yourself more work next year.
Well,
you put 2 hours into it this year.
In outer space somewhere.
I've not done this homework, but I'm not in competing with Daniel Jeremiah necessarily, but I just like to see, I'd like just to know, I mean, maybe he blew everyone out of the water.
Ricky.
How many did he get right?
Ricky.
Yo.
How did DJ do? Did you tabulate that?
I was looking at it, and I don't know the answer.
Oh, cool. Thanks. I actually, you know, I did debate about an hour and a half ago asking, I was like, is that something that a producer, the host of the podcast asked his producer to see how DJ did. And then I was like, no, she's going to think I'm a so I'm not going to ask her to do it. But then maybe she'll surprise me and maybe she will have done it, but she didn't.
Well, also, I don't.
Dan, it's your birthday. I wasn't going to look at DJ's work. I would never do that to you.
That is a great.
I'm not necessarily looking to cook up another feud with a coworker at this point either. I would maybe, you know, tap the brakes on that for a bit because I think it might ultimately have a negative impact on my scenario here at NFL Network. So, yeah.
Any final thoughts?
I just did it. While you were yapping, he got 7 right.
Oh, so good.
There's a margin for error here. I just, you know, I quickly looked, but I think he got 7. Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you.
I'm not going to dunk on Jeremiah on Twitter
absolutely
on this
not.
Because I feel like that would be maybe a bridge too far.
Well, and I would really ask the listeners maybe don't do that either.
I don't
listeners settle down with you know hitting DJ with this or don't at me in it.
A bridge too far. I feel like him taking down, you know, he just tried to take down your wardrobe on television last week. That's a lot more personal than some mock draft. Go for it.
I know, but you know, you look how he dresses, and it's like, do I need to fire back at the guy who dresses like he's at Sunday service every day? I'm not going to do that.
Look how mature you are at age 40.
You are really a changed man.
Exactly. I'm not going to do that. All right. Any final thoughts?
I would say this. I think I know that round one is, you know, there's no slowing the hoopla train on round one. I think day two is always more interesting. Round two, at least, is always more interesting for me. I think that there, and also so many great players like come out of round two, you know, that we may not know that well today. But Nick Chubb came in round two. Who would have known what you're getting out of that guy?
I mean,
so
those are the,
it's a great day.
Those are the moves that really good teams like the Jets, for instance, haven't had an all-pro drafted in the second round since Mark Gastineau. Teams that are run well. That's where they really score because you're not paying them even at the top level of the rookie scale and you got them under your team control and they're a huge impact for your team. That's how you do it. And that's the Belichick thing.
I like to approach the draft by pairing it with free agency and seeing which franchises might be transformed. And the off seasons that I'm really enjoying, the Buccaneers, Chargers, Cardinals, Bengals, Broncos, to me, all look like 5 franchises that could be so much better in a year. And then I love what the 49ers and Chiefs have done coming off the Super Bowl to like Yeah, you lose DeForest Buckner, but you replace him with Ken Law. I mean, I feel like both those teams have done such a good job of not losing too much. They haven't lost any ground on the competition, really.
Yeah, this Friday of the draft, and Saturday to some extent, is, I think, saucier than normal because the running backs and the receivers, which, you know, ultimately guys like us are following a little bit more in the fantasy guys. It's a great group of guys still left. Like, I watched these running backs. I swear this running back class is awesome. Like, if these running backs were in the draft 15 years ago, there'd be four or five first rounders. It's just like a different way to look at the league. But then you look back a couple years ago and Cook, Kamara, you know, Connor, who am I forgetting? Someone else went in the middle rounds of that, like in the second, third, and fourth round. And they're all like, Joe Mixon is another one I'm thinking of, like all in that draft. And they're all stars. And Cam Akers, I think you could throw in that mix. Jonathan Taylor, maybe J.K. Dobbins, I like a lot. And like, these are guys who will step in right away and be factors. And there's a ton of receivers out there too. So it seems like it's a more fun Friday than normal.
Yep.
Few things I loved, Roger Goodell's black denim jeans.
Oh, yeah.
Nice and casual in the basement. Comfortable. Gotta like that.
He was TikToking with Judy, by the way. So
nice.
Very nice.
I liked, what else did I like? Deion Sanders in the little COVID-19 intro. He promised everything was going to be okay. He's like, everybody.
He did.
Everything's going to be okay. And I was like, oh.
I noticed that. He said, okay. I think he said, I promise you.
He did say that with like a football field of a backyard behind him. And I just thought, like, how many people are watching this? Like, yeah, it's fine with if you got a football field behind you that you know.
Like, at first I had a lot of like consternation and concern about the future of mankind and what's going to happen next. But then Deion Sanders promised me everything was going to be okay. So now I'm
well, you're in the clear.
Happy about that. So that was another birthday gift.
Leadership.
And I like this quote from new Jets left tackle Mekhi Becton. I've never been to New York. I know the Jets had Brett Favre in the past. I know they had LaDainian Tomlinson in the past. Jets legends, Brett Favre and LaDainian Tomlinson.
Well, he's not wrong. I hate to say it, but for like a 21-year-old, Dan, that's what they know. Yeah,
but even like a youngster, Brett Favre, like most people that blinked forgot about the Brett Favre New York Jets season. But yeah, it's on his radar. Good for him. All right. Did I mention the Deion thing? I'm really feeling good.
You brought that up.
I mean, he promised.
I do.
Big white beard.
I do feel like we should give a little love to the Bengals that they got there. I know we just went past and we kind of knew they're going to get Joe Burrow. But good job. Good job, Bengals. I mean, you just got a guy who's about as if someone can inspire some confidence in the Cincinnati faithful and that organization, Joe Burrow seems like that guy.
And good for you guys, because when the internet was dunking on Dave Gettleman for putting on a mask as the ESPN went to break at one point, I thought you guys would bring that up and make fun of him. But you know what? He's 69 years old, and here was his quote when asked about it. Well, I have a young IT fellow over here with me, and we're social distancing. Part of it is the mask. I'm fine.
By the way, like what, a year removed from cancer?
Right.
Yeah, a few precautions, Gettleman. I applaud that.
Yeah. In the Gettleman jabs are becoming tired. Sir.
Wes throwing a compliment at Gettleman in a big spot.
I've complimented Gettleman a lot over the years. It's not until he decided to run the Giants like they were a 1948 team that I
right. He was a podcast favorite for quite a bit of time.
His ultimate
there.
Sin, let's be honest, was that he became the boss of the Giants. Not a favorite team around these parts.
When he came in and lied about Eli that he hasn't lost a step and he's every bit as good as he's always been, that really got him on my bad side.
All right. I like the beginning part of the Gettleman conversation there.
Okay.
You're right, though, Wes. I forgot he's a cancer survivor, so even more so. How are you, by the way? You had a checkup recently.
I did. I've got another one coming up very soon. So far, so good. All my scans have been clean, and I feel good.
Beautiful. And all Lakeisha, right. How's the mobility?
She's starting to feel she's entered a new stage where she's not enjoying her body as much as she did, you know, a few weeks ago. It's starting to, she's a lot more fatigued. She just feels heavy. You know how it is at the end.
Yep. Like Peyton Manning, when he was getting pressure near the end of his career, just dropping down.
She has a different walking style now by necessity.
Yep. Well, you're about a month away, right? I mean, and she has a human inside of her body when she walks around. So that's
almost 6 pounds now, that human.
Yeah, that's
wow.
It's a lot to deal with.
Well done. All right. This pod will stand tomorrow, so you'll have plenty of time to take it all in, and then we'll be back Saturday evening when round 7 is complete, and we will recap the whole damn thing, and also share some winners and losers. So exciting.
Dan, I want to play something for you, but before we get out of here.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Who's this?
You'll see. Who's this?
Happy birthday, Zusha, from beautiful Belfast in Northern Ireland.
Dan, happy 40th from beautiful sunny Afghanistan. I hope that you and the rest of the heroes are staying isolated and safe from COVID, a.k.a. the biggest C.
Wow.
Go Hawks.
Danny boy, happy birthday, buddy.
I just want to send a very special happy birthday shout-out to the old Zeuser himself, Mr. Dan Hanses. I'm wishing you peace and prosperity in the year to come. Hey, they say 40 is the new 30. Not dead.
Danny, happy birthday, Bruce.
Look at this guy.
Hey, Dan, wishing you a happy birthday.
Happy birthday to Dan Hanses. There's nobody else in the world who could host the Around the NFL podcast in the way that you do.
Hey, Dan, just wanted to wish you a happy birthday.
Just want to give a happy birthday to Dan.
All the best to you and yours. Stay safe and go Hawks.
Happy birthday, Dan. I wish health and happiness to you and your family during these times. And, of course, Sam Darnold as well.
Hey, Zeus, our literal mailman.
Yes, I love it. Happy birthday.
I've been listening since the beginning in 2013. You'll always be the young gun to me. I'm going to have a Tito's tonight in your honor.
Cheers from D.C.
Hey, Dan, on behalf of all of New England and the handful of women who do listen to the show, happy birthday.
Hey, Dan, just wanted to say happy birthday. Got the big 4-0 going.
This birthday's for Dan.
Happy birthday from Ireland. Best podcast in my mind.
And I just want to wish my birthday twin a happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thanks for all you do, Dan Hanses.
Well done for making it to the big 4-0.
Well, Zeuse, happy 40th all the way from Ghent in Belgium.
We'll pick you up by your puppy scruff.
Happy birthday, Dan. You've always been my favorite of heroes.
Happy birthday, Dan, from Bunkers in Finland.
Dan, feliz cumpleaños desde México. Espero te la pases súper bien. Un abrazo.
You guys are keeping me sane through the pandemic, so happy 40th birthday. Girls do listen to football podcasts, too.
Happy birthday, Dan. You're a legend, mate.
Happy birthday. I want to thank you so much for everything you do. You bring joy to so many people's lives.
40 years old. Today, we are all just fans.
Happy birthday, Zeuse, from me and his anus. I'll pick you up by your birthday scruff.
It's been 40 years since the world was graced with the Zeuse.
Happy birthday, man. Don't do anything that most of us wouldn't do.
G'day, and happy birthday from Australia. Dan, did you know that the average lifespan of an American male is less than 80 years? It's all downhill from now.
Happy birthday, Dan.
All right.
You are a wonderful, kind, intelligent, funny, handsome human being. And I feel very lucky to know you and to have worked with you over the years. I hope you have a great day, and I'll see you soon.
This is Dan. Bon anniversaire. Welcome to your 40s. I hope they don't suck.
Oh, now you're going to make me cry. You're going to make me cry on the internet.
That was emotional. Whoa.
That was very sweet.
Look at Erica Tito's.
Happy birthday.
You deserve one.
That was so nice. Thank you, Erica, for putting that together. And thank you.
And
thank
those
you.
Were just a few. I mean, the amount that was sent in, Dan, it's overwhelming. You are such a special guy.
And those the females were actual listeners, not hired talent.
Yeah, no, I didn't hire anyone.
That's great.
We love it. We love our female listeners and all the blokes out there as well. That was so nice. So thank you for that. I really appreciate it. And I'm very happy to be doing what I do and being alive. And it is true. I did look it up, actually. The male life expectancy is 79. So
I love seeing so many different looks and accents. I mean, what a wide variety we have as listeners. Interesting people.
I love seeing Zach Goldman, our former producer's look. I mean, he's on a whole nother one. It was beautiful.
And Erica not even threatened. Letting him be on that reel was very nice.
Although she put him second to last. She didn't want to give him like the closer.
Close.
You know,
didn't let him close.
Sydney also sent in a greeting.
Yeah, didn't make the cut.
All right. Thank you for that. Thank you to all the listeners. And thank you to everyone for listening. And we'll be back on Saturday. And I'm going to drink this Tito's right now in honor of all you fine people, including my podcast mates. Love you guys.
Drink too.
This is Dan Hansa signing off for The Quiet Storm, the mailman, the old boss, Ricky Hollywood, and all you people out there. Till Saturday night.